You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. On today's show, I had a great guest, the Jolly Olive. For those of you who aren't familiar, Jolly Olive is a YouTube channel created by Jack Oliver, and I had him on to talk about his channel and some of his videos, and also because he's a Mets fan, we talked about this team and the upcoming season and his thoughts on where things stand. It's a great conversation and part of our continued integration of bringing voices from MetsMorizeOnline.com into this show. We are seeing a great partnership forming here every day. You can check out the morning briefings at MetsMorizeOnline.com. and find a synopsis of the show and a link to this show. So I think it's really great. I think we're going to see a lot of great content come out of this. Now, for those of you who don't know, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. As I just mentioned, you can also find some of my work at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Now, let's get into this great conversation I had with the Jolly Olive. All right, Mets fans, excited to bring on this next guest, Jolly Olive, or Jack Oliver. He has a great YouTube channel on all things baseball, but he's going to be doing some great Mets coverage with us at MetsMorize this season. So first of all, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm really excited to be here.
Now, your videos, it's really cool because especially the Mets videos, I think you kind of pinpoint like peculiar moments in Mets history that we forget about. Like the Kirk Nieuwenhuis video just went out recently where Kirk Nieuwenhuis played a big role down the show. I forgot all about Nieuwenhuis.
I'm glad that's the goal. You're supposed to forget.
Yeah. I didn't remember that Nieuwenhuis played. I mean, once I saw it, you know, it sparks you. You remember it. So talk about how you started your channel and what you try to do with your channel.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there are a lot of like sports content creators coming out because of, you know, everything that's been going on the past couple, past year or so. And my whole thing was that, you know, I'm just like a lot of other guys that browse YouTube and I watch like Foolish Baseball and John Boy Media and all these guys. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll try my hand since I got, you know, some new free time on my hands. And it started out as like a Mets passion project. Like some of my earliest videos were booth compilations of Gary, Keith and Ron. One of them was about a conversation between Jacob deGrom and Terry Collins. One of them was about Ike Davis. One of them was about the 2000 Mets. Like it was just basically like, what's all the random Mets knowledge I have in my brain racking around in there? Maybe I'll put it on Reddit, on Mets Facebook, see who clicks, see who likes it. And then it just kind of took off from there. And, you know, I didn't want to keep it limited to one team, but, you know, the Mets videos are some of the most popular ones. So I've always tried to keep up with the Mets content.
So I'm assuming you are a Mets fan.
Yeah, you'd be correct in that assumption.
Yeah, so obviously, and I think the Mets are a good content farm when it comes to that because there is so much peculiar history. One of the videos, John Buck's Hall of Fame month, was a great one. I actually just watched that today. Hey, I had seen the preview of it as MetsMorize kind of did that teaser video on Twitter. Right. So talk a little bit about John Buck's Hall of Fame month.
Yeah, so I was born into a Mets family, but I only really started watching Mets games religiously come like 2010 or something. So the John Buck year was one of my first years because I believe it's 2013 or something. And I just remember, you know, having no expectations for the team because as long as I watched religiously, the team was bad. And I was just kind of used to that. And then John Buck ends April with like 10 home runs. And I'm like, this guy was a shoo-in from a trade. And all of a sudden he's hitting like Babe Ruth. So I just thought I had a little bit of free time. And I was like, I could probably throw together a John Buck video that could be like 3 to 4 minutes. And like, you know, maybe some fans forgot about it and they click on it because, you know, it's a boost. It's just a huge wave of nostalgia for a lot of Mets fans. And I think that like wave of nostalgia videos are like some of my favorite on the site. So I wanted to sort of give my own back, if that makes sense.
I'll tell you, it actually sparked some different nostalgia for me. I thought about the month of Henry Blanco and Rod Barajas.
Yeah, see that's even further back, I think, right? That's
Yeah,
like
that was
09 or something.
it made me get onto Baseball Reference and do some research.
Yeah.
I was in, I think, Key West on a family trip. So the only way me and my dad could watch games, we had to go to this sports bar. We had to walk a couple miles to it. And there was these two games that actually I looked up May 7th and May 8th against the San Francisco Giants. And on May 7th, Rob Barajas hits two home runs and hits a walk-off against the Giants.
What a beast.
The next day, we were like, why is Rob Barajas not in the lineup? He has a day off and Henry Blanco's in. In the 11th inning, Henry Blanco hit a walk-off home run.
That one I remember just because I remember them coming back to back. And I think Blanco had like a walk-off grand slam at some point, or maybe I'm making that up.
Hey, you know,
That,
maybe this is a video you can look
I
into.
mean, maybe, man. We don't have enough videos on random Mets catchers from the past, I guess.
It seems like they had a great run of just random, obscure, longtime backups that would have some moments. And I did look up. By the end of May, Rod Barajas had an 844 OPS. Henry Blanco had an 827 OPS.
That's unreal. I can't
Well,
believe that's actually a real stat.
you want to guess what their OPSs were by the end of the season?
Respectively, I'm going to say that only one of them is over 700.
You nailed it.
Cool.
So Rod
Nice.
Barajas finished the year at 731, and
Okay.
Blanco fell all the way off to 571.
Oh, you hate to see it. I wasn't going to go sub 600, but
Yeah, he struggled.
Henry
So,
Blanco. Hate to see it.
well, I'll just rattle off some of the other videos that you've done on the Mets. We got R.A. Dickey, baseball's most unlikely ace. You have the conversation that turned Jacob deGrom into an ace that we talked about, or you mentioned the Kirk Nieuwenhuis video. I mentioned which Met or who belongs in the Mets Mount Rushmore. We got a video on Ike Davis. So, Mets fans, check out Jolly Olive on YouTube, and you can find all these great videos on the Mets. And what is the most recent one you've done? It was just a baseball video, right?
So
On
yeah,
MLB.
the most recent video I did actually drop today. It was on the latest baseball game ever played. It was a doubleheader between the Padres and Phillies in 1993. Game one got delayed by 4 hours because of rain, but they decided to go on with the doubleheader anyway. So game two started at 1:30 a.m. and ended at 4:41 a.m.
Wow.
And there's a lot of weird stuff that happened because it was a baseball game that took place, after midnight. So.
I feel bad for that broadcast team.
Oh, there are plenty of sound bites in the video of them just like completely exasperated. They want to go home, but they got a good ending. It's a great game overall. It was fun
All
to
right.
watch.
So check that out. All right, so let's switch gears a bit and talk about this current Mets team. As a fan, like you said, you really kind of picked it up at 2010. So you had what, like a 2 year run of some good Mets baseball in
Yeah,
15 and 16.
that's pretty much it, man.
So what is this like for you, seeing this shift? And are you still a little bit worried that once the games start, this might be the same old Mets team?
So here's the thing. I'm obviously glad with, new ownership and all the things they've done to build depth. And I'm not one of the believers that this is the same old Mets because they're not very clearly. Anybody who follows the team day to day knows that this team is going to be different. Whether or not they win their division is a completely out of the discussion, but the ownership is trying to build a long-term winner, which I can get behind. I also had this weird feeling of I don't feel like I've earned it as much as other Mets fans, if that makes sense, because other Mets fans have hacked it from like 1990, 1980, and they got to see the World Series and everything, but that's way more losing seasons that they had to endure. I've only been around for about a decade or so. But overall, I mean, all you have to say is that we acquired a top 10 player in baseball via trade and gave up pretty much nothing. And I think if we did that move alone, this offseason is still a win. So I'm cautiously optimistic about our season coming forward. I think that in a standard playoff format with five teams, I think we'd be a soft lock for five. I don't know that we've won our division yet. I need a couple more moves to be convinced, especially with our bullpen right now with Seth Lugo being out. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I will say, that's the one thing with Lindor that it does get a little bit frustrating seeing Mets fans just upset about the James Paxton signing elsewhere. And you forget, if you look at every move this offseason, I've said this since when I was even just trying to speak it into existence at the beginning of the offseason. I said Francisco Lindor is the best player that will change teams this offseason.
Right.
And at this point, I don't see any other player that moves the needle like Lindor. So I think with that, the Mets are going to be a lot better. I don't think before that move, the Mets had a player on the roster that could really make a legitimate case for having an MVP season.
Yeah, I 100% agree. 100% agree. Like, you looked at 2019 and Mookie Betts was the guy that moves the needle and gives you like six war for your team or whatever and like changes the course of your season. Francisco Lindor is that guy. And this whole sequence really goes to show you how supportive and volatile a New York fan base can be at the same time, because a day ago I'm on Twitter and I'm scrolling and I'm seeing Mets fans irate on the timeline because we didn't get Justin Wilson. And it seems like there's just like a little bit of short-term memory that like we've acquired so many great players. And like, you know, we haven't even talked about Trevor May or any of the other any of these other great signings. And, you know, Francisco Lindor is a guy that is going to change the course of your franchise, whether that is just next year or for the next 10 years, depending on extension. It's a win regardless.
And getting upset about relief pitchers is something that always bothers me, because the same people who are mad that they missed out on Justin Wilson were thrilled when the Mets made a trade or they signed J.J. Putz. And right. who loved the Anthony Swarzak signing and thought that he was going to be great. It's so volatile. You could look up by the end of the season and Drew Smith could be the Mets' second best relief pitcher.
See, that's how I know you know your stuff. Drew Smith is a sleeper pick. He's going to make the club. Just wait.
I think so. You know, he had a really weird season last year, but there was enough moments early on that I think there's something there. And I think, you know, at this point, taking as many flyers on minor league signings to fill out your bullpen is pretty smart, because you know what?
Yeah.
You don't know who's going to show up at spring training and just take off.
Exactly. There's a ton of guys that the Mets have on minor league deals right now, like Trevor Hildenberger or Jerry Blevins, or like any of these guys could just kind of like figure it out. And like, you know, if you're surrounded by 40 guys that are going to be a winning team and have a winning culture, that changes the way you perform. Like, you know, you can go into the arsenal and the velocity and whatever, but being a part of a winning team, I think helps you become a better player by default.
Absolutely. I think that's where you see random guys like the Kelly Johnson in 2015.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah, just guys that step up. So with all that being said, though, if there's another move to be made, what do you want the Mets to do to round out this team?
So if you asked me a week ago, my answer would probably be different, because a week ago, Seth Lugo wasn't out until May. I think the move to be made is probably Trevor Rosenthal, and you're probably going to have to bite a pretty penny to get him. Because, you know, he is worth that. He had a fantastic 2020. He's really returned to form. And when you look at the Mets bullpen right now, at the bottom end of it, you got guys like Robert Gazelman and maybe Franklin Colome projected to make the bullpen. And I think you need one more really good weapon at the back end to go with your Edwin Diaz, to go with your Trevor May. Because you can't really rely on Familia and Betances returning to form, because that's kind of just, you know, throwing a coin in the wishing well and hoping for the best. Whereas there's a guy in the market in Trevor Rosenthal, or maybe even like Jeremy Jeffress or something like that. He's still out there. You could go get him. But I think you need like a seventh inning guy or an eighth inning guy to really make you feel comfortable about, you know, taking starters out in the sixth inning. So I think that's the move to be made to finish the offseason.
I think that that's definitely a good place for the Mets to go at this point. When you bring up Familia, for me, he's always that guy. Like, it's not like guys are tagging him and hitting home runs. He just can't throw strikes. And I think the league's figured him out. Just if I was stepping up to face Familia, I would take until I saw strike three, literally, because he's going to throw four balls first. With all that, though, are you comfortable with the starting rotation? Because I've been making the argument that at this point, I think they're fine with Joey Lucchesi as the five and David Peterson as the four. And if their rotation really has problems, people forget you can make trades in season.
Yeah, and I think this goes back into the short-term memory thing, where last year, entering the season, Rick Porcello was our number two, and he ended the season with like a 5.6 ERA or something. Lucchesi, I think worst-case scenario, is probably going to give you like a 4.5 ERA. Maybe he outperforms his FIP or something. But honestly, I'm super comfortable with him at the back end. You got DeGrom, you got Cookie. Thor comes back in May. Stroh has the qualifying offer and is really going to show up this year, I think. And David Peterson quietly had a fantastic 2020, where he finished like top five in rookie of the year voting. This is a really good rotation. Maybe it's not best in the division because there's a lot of young talent on other teams, specifically the Braves. And, you know, the Phillies have a great two-headed monster at the top of theirs. But in terms of actual depth, and now you got guys like Yamamoto in the pipeline, maybe a Jared Eichhoff you could throw in there. There's a lot of options that the Mets have, whereas, you know, a lot of the other teams are very heavy at the top and then thin at the bottom. So I think I would rather take ours than compared to other teams.
I got one last little bit off the cuff question for you. As a YouTube creator, I'm very curious if you follow along with Trevor Bauer's YouTube page, and how did you feel about his announcements? I thought it was maybe a little bit overproduced, but hey, that's just me.
So there is never anything wrong with players promoting their own brand. We see it in every other sport, and it's good for every other sport. And not only does it benefit the player, but it benefits the league because you get things like commercials and player brands and things like that. And Trevor Bauer moving forward with momentum and bringing different people on and partnering with John Boy is all great for the sport. With that being said, when you create the decision-esque, you know, promo for your free agency, you know, trials or whatever, and for lack of a better word, you got to have the season to back that up. And, you know, a 1.7 ERA through 12 starts is really good, but it's still not a full season. And, you know, there's nothing Trevor Bauer can do about that. But when he, you know, had that head of steam and headed into the offseason, and he made sure everyone knew that this was going to be the offseason of Trevor Bauer, it just rubbed me the wrong way. So I didn't really end up following much of it. I don't know if you're familiar with like guys like Eric Sim, who's a minor league pitcher who kind of documents his journey back to the major leagues. When Trevor Bauer does stuff with Eric Sim, I'm going to sit down and watch because I think that's a really fun partnership. But when it's a video for 10 minutes about Trevor Bauer talking about where am I going to go next? What do I want in a team and stuff like this? And it gets a little bit repetitive. That's when I sort of tune out. So with all that being said, the final decision video, it did nothing for me, really. And, you know, at $40 million for the first year, $45 million for the second year, go be a Los Angeles Dodger, man. That's fine with me. Totally fine with me.
That was my thoughts exactly. All right. So yeah. Tell everyone again where they can find your work, and thanks for joining the show.
Hey, so I am Jolly Olive on YouTube. We just passed 10K subscribers a couple weeks ago. So if you've somehow already seen a video and you're listening to the podcast, thank you. And if you haven't checked out any videos, I think you might find some stuff that you enjoy. So it's Jolly Olive on YouTube. If you want to hear me or if you want to, you know, read me being stupid on a timeline, I'm Jolly_Olive on Twitter as well. Come join the conversation. I'm talking about Mets every day. Hey, man, I had a really good time talking on your podcast.
For sure. We'll have you back. Definitely.
Sounds good, man.
That'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan and follow the show at Locked On Mets. I got a little extra incentive to do those things as there's a great giveaway right now. All you have to do is retweet a pinned tweet on the Locked On Mets page with a new giveaway for a Dominic Smith signed photo. So check that out. And also, if you're the type of baseball fan that can't help but get giddy over prospects, we have the podcast for you. Hosted by our guy, Aram Layton, Locked On MLB Prospects is the only daily podcast devoted entirely to the stars of tomorrow. From team focus, farm system breakdowns, to prospect rankings and interviews with some of the brightest up-and-comers in the game, Locked On MLB Prospects is the best way to stay plugged in on the future of your favorite team. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.